Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.
Wir bei Vertex wissen, dass die Geschwindigkeit des globalen Handels zunimmt, was eine Steuerverwaltung komplexer macht. Und Ihre unternehmenseigenen Systeme sind nicht dafür ausgelegt, diese Steuerkomplexität zu bewältigen. Hier setzen wir mit unserer Plattform an, die Continuous Compliance ermöglicht. So erhalten Sie mehr Transparenz, mehr Genauigkeit und mehr Vertrauen in Ihre Steuerdaten. Sie wollen mehr über Continuous Compliance erfahren? Dann besuchen Sie vertexinc.com/de.
Coming up, an attempted coup underway in Bolivia. Troops entering the presidential palace, but the president has called for them to stand down. The country's been gripped for months by protests, as what was once one of Latin America's economic success stories has declined into a foreign exchange crisis. We'll have the latest from La Paz, and we'll also look at the reasons behind the upheaval. That's all to come on World Business Report, which is coming up after the latest BBC World Service news.
BBC News with Moira Alderson. A military coup is underway in Bolivia, where hundreds of soldiers and armoured vehicles have encircled government buildings in the city of La Paz. The coup attempt is being led by the head of the army, General Juan José Zúñiga, who has just announced that the cabinet is about to be changed. The US Supreme Court has accidentally published a major opinion on abortion rights, which appears set to overturn a near-total ban on the practice in Idaho. The document indicates that the justices might take a position that backs the Biden administration. Lawyers for the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu have told a Jerusalem court, where his trial on corruption charges is being held, that he won't be able to testify until next March. The former president of Honduras, Juan Orlando Hernandez, has been sentenced by a US judge to 45 years in prison for drug trafficking. He'd been convicted by a federal court in New York in March. The Brazilian president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, has said that Argentina's Javier Milei owes him and Brazil an apology for insulting comments he's made over the past year. Mr. Milei has described Mr. Lula da Silva as corrupt and a communist. The United States has welcomed the Kenyan president's decision to scrap tax increases that provoked deadly protests across the country. At the Euros football tournament in Germany, Georgia have completed a surprise 2-0 win over Portugal in Group F to join the former champions and Turkey in the last 16. Turkey defeated the Czech Republic by 2-1. Keepers at an animal conservation centre in Spain have blamed a music festival for the death of 4 gazelles. Vets in Almeria say the animals were frightened by loud, amplified music on Saturday. The city council insists the concert volume was not high. BBC News.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, an attempted coup in Bolivia after months of protests over the declining economy. Also, Kenya's president U-turns on his tax bill after bloody protests in Nairobi. We'll look at the pressure on many developing countries in dealing with IMF agreements. We'll also hear from the head of Dubai's giant Freeport, and learn how Spanish farmers are building cooperatives to rival supermarkets. But we'll start with the attempted coup that's got underway in Bolivia. Hundreds of soldiers and armoured vehicles have encircled government buildings in the city of La Paz. That's the sound as armed military personnel enclosed Murillo Square in the centre of the city. President Luis Arce has denounced what he called the irregular presence of army units and called for democracy to be respected. The coup attempt is being led by General Juan José Zúñiga. He gave an interview outside the presidential palace saying the cabinet was about to be changed. The former left-wing president of Bolivia, Evo Morales, has urged community and union leaders to take to the streets to defend democracy and the rule of law. The minister for the presidency, Marianela Prada, and a government spokeswoman told us what was happening.
I want to denounce before the Bolivian people and the international community an attempted coup d'etat here in Bolivia. I am Marianela Prada, government spokesperson. I'm in the presidential palace. Murillo Square has been taken over by military tanks and military troops. We understand that it's a faction of the army. They've removed people from the square and are not allowing others to enter.
Maria Nella Prada there in La Paz. Let's get the very latest now from the BBC's Guillermo Olmo, who's in Miami and monitoring events from there. Guillermo, just tell us what is the latest that we know. It seems now that the president himself has changed, the cabinet has changed the leadership of the military, and you've got one lot of military and another lot of military.
Well, what we last heard from the president is the televised address that he has released to all Bolivians, where he called the Bolivian people to defend democracy. And he said that he and his cabinet were standing strong against the attempted coup. He said that he would face this threat to democracy and can call on people to support it. That's what we have. And what we have from the surroundings of the presidential palace is that the troops are still there, and they've been repelling the government supporters that are trying to make their way into the presidential palace, as far as it seems, to keep the government in place.
Now, Guillermo, this has been a coup that's happened in a situation where there's a lot of condemnation around. We've heard, I think, from Brazil and now from the United States and also from the Organization of American States. I mean, this is not something that the area is going to allow to continue to happen, is it?
Well, we don't know. It's not the first time that this kind of thing happens in Bolivia. You can remember that in 2019, former President Evo Morales resigned after pressure from the top military commanders. And then an interim government ensued, and this government stood ruling the country for until 2020. And then interim president Janine Añez was jailed after losing power in an election. One of the goals that this general, Juan José Zúñiga, has stated is to release what he described as all political prisoners. And one of the names he named is the name of former interim president Janine Añez.
And this is a country that has a big economic problem at the moment as well. There have been many protests, haven't there, about the cost of things, inflation, and also the lack of foreign exchange, the lack of dollars.
Well, for many years, Bolivia stood as an exception in a region that has been plagued with economic turmoil for years, and the Bolivian economic history was a story of success, and this was during the years of Evo Morales. Well, the country exported a lot of gas and developed a lot of social programs that made Mr. Morales pretty popular at the time, but this seems to be running out. Over the last few years, there have been reports that the country was running out of foreign currency. Last year, the central bank imposed restrictions on how many dollars Bolivians can access, and the gas exports have declined too. And what we've seen over the last few weeks have been protests all across the country, in different parts of the country, over the cost of living. So probably this has also had an impact on how on the political situation developed in Bolivia.
Guillermo, thanks so much for speaking to us. Guillermo Olmo there is monitoring the situation from Miami. Well, as he said, the country has been in a deep economic malaise, dangerously depleted foreign exchange reserves, prices surging, dollars scarce, queues snaking away from fuel-strapped petrol stations as well. And there have been protests intensifying over the economy's precipitous decline from what had been one of the continent's fastest growing two decades ago. Let's talk about this with someone who's studied in some depth, Monica de Bol, who's senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. Monica, thank you for being with us. How bad is the economy in Bolivia at the moment? Is it the kind of thing that might lead to the kind of pressure that would change its politics?
Oh, absolutely. And thank you very much for having me. But yes, absolutely. I mean, Bolivia has been in financial dire straits for quite some time, actually. And the situation isn't getting any better. The situation is getting worse. Part of the reason for why the situation is just deteriorating and deteriorating without any action on the part of the government has to do precisely with the fact that in 2025, there will be presidential elections in Bolivia. And currently, there are two people vying for the candidacy. And those two are precisely the current president, as well as former president Evo Morales. They're both from the same political party. So that has pretty much led to a kind of a stalemate when it comes to dealing with the economic problems of Bolivia. And meanwhile, the currency has been devaluing quite substantially because of a dramatic falling in natural gas exports. And that has resulted in a very steep rise in inflation and in domestic prices. So yes, the situation is ripe for social and political upheaval, which is exactly what we're witnessing.
You mentioned about the natural gas situation. And I mean, it is a country that has a lot of natural resources like natural gas. But why is that not working for it in the way it has done in the past?
Because the sector needs a lot of new investments, and those investments have not been forthcoming over the past few years for a lot of different reasons, some which have to do with, you know, just the mere fact that investments are not really flowing that much to Latin America overall, and others that have to do with perceived mismanagement in the sector, as well as government policies that have not been conducive to foreign investment. So the reason why we've seen this dramatic fall in exports does not have anything to do with the fact that Bolivia is lacking natural gas. In fact, as you say, it has an abundance of natural gas. But if you don't invest in the sector, then your capacity to extract those resources diminishes, and therefore your exports fall. That's the trouble.
Now, one of the big issues has been, as you say, the problem with exports and therefore foreign exchange. But it's interesting that the numbers of people who have been protesting have very much been from the informal part of the economy. Is that part that's really suffering?
Yes, because what happens is it's a vicious cycle. So the moment you have a fall in exports, you get currency devaluation. When the currency devalues, all the goods that are imported by Bolivians, whether they even be, you know, relatively simple goods, every single imported good, its price is going to go up. That's going to put pressure on inflation. And then those who are going to suffer the most from inflation are precisely the informal workers, the lower classes, the poor, and the lower middle classes. So those are exactly the groups in society that have been protesting over the past several weeks. And in fact, we had one big protest happen just yesterday, hours before this coup, this attempted coup.
Yeah. So is there any prospect, do you think, of restoring the economy? If you had a more stable political situation, are there measures that could be taken to try and get back to the stability that did exist a couple of decades ago?
Yes, but it would take time. It's not something that you can do immediately. So the current situation as it's playing out on the ground, we have to watch very carefully to see in which direction things are going to go. At the moment, I would say the situation is extremely fragile. It's hard to exaggerate how fragile it is. And if the government does manage to get control of the situation at the moment, it's not as if it can deliver a solution, you know, within a few weeks or within a few days or even within a few months. So it is going to have to build, you know, coalitions, and it's going to have to build consensus, and it's going to have to try to get the population on its side, because the measures to really staunch the problems here are not going to be immediate, or their effects are not going to be immediate.
Monica, thank you so much for being with us. Monica de Bol there, Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. And I'll bring you up to speed with any other developments in Bolivia if they come through before the end of the program. Now let's turn our minds to Kenya, where the president has backed away from a finance bill that led to deadly riots on the streets of Nairobi on Tuesday. William Ruto said the people had made it clear they wanted nothing to do with the bill and its plans to increase taxes. He promised to cut spending in the presidential office and work to tackle the country's debts.
It is necessary for us to have a conversation as a nation going forward. How do we manage the affairs of the country together? How do we manage our debt situation together? How do we work on the budget with the deficits that now exist together?
President William Ruto. Well, how will that go down with many young people who joined those protests in Nairobi on Tuesday? Chris is 26. He spent several hours out on the streets. He welcomed President Ruto's U-turn.
For me, I think it's a sigh of relief. It feels good to finally win one, at least for us as the youth. And especially when you consider that many of the things in the finance bill are actually going to affect the youth more than anyone. Your take-home salary would have reduced significantly. But most importantly, it's that the things we were being taxed for just didn't make sense. It just felt like we're throwing money down a pit. Because a lot of this income that he was going to collect from our taxes is going to go to pay a debt which we were not really consulted in taking. 2 years in, so much money has been borrowed, but we can't really point out any tangible like development projects that this government has done. That's a huge problem.
Chris, one of the protesters in Nairobi, but it's a dilemma that's facing many developing nations right now. Sri Lanka's just reached a debt restructuring deal with its key bilateral lenders in what's a major step towards its financial recovery. That agreement covers up to $10 billion of loans. Sri Lanka defaulted on its foreign debt more than 2 years ago after running out of foreign exchange. President Ranil Wickremesinghe said separate agreements had been signed with China, Sri Lanka's biggest lender, and a Paris-based grouping, which includes Japan and India.
Sri Lanka won.
Sri Lanka won. Over the past 2 years, we have worked diligently to reach agreements with our bilateral creditors, engaging in extensive discussions. The economic progress we have achieved has provided us with considerable strength in these negotiations.
Well, the Sri Lanka deal is part of a process. The debt restructuring is a condition of an IMF bailout for the country. The tax rises Kenya has now abandoned were also agreed in a deal with the International Monetary Fund. Now, some think there's a pattern here, that the pressure on debt is unfair and destructive coming from the IMF. Sarah Sadoun is a senior researcher and advocate at Human Rights Watch in New York, and I asked her what she thought was the big problem with the Kenyan economy overall.
Well, I think the Kenyan economy is facing similar problems to many economies across the globe in the wake of COVID, of increasing prices following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, of a rise in interest rates that have forced governments, particularly African governments, to spend huge amounts of their revenue on servicing debt. And so many have gone to the IMF and requested loan programs. And as part of those programs, they are forced to raise revenues and reduce spending in ways that can really hurt people's ability to afford what they need. It hurts their economic and social rights. And rather than making sure that the cost of recovery, the burden of recovery falls on those who can afford it the most, they end up cranking up regressive taxes or cutting spending that for programs that people rely on, like health, education, and it is fueling anger around the world, not just in Kenya, but we've seen, of course, most recently in Kenya, huge protests against these measures.
But Sarah, isn't the point that the IMF brokered deals are there to try and repay debt, to try and help the Kenyan economy come out of debt so that it can function in the world of borrowing money around the world if it needs to? And in a way, it's the Kenyan government's responsibility or individual states' responsibility as to how they divide up where the money has to come from in that.
So this is what the IMF claims, that it's setting targets and it's on the government to decide how it achieves them. But this obscures a much more complex reality. First of all, the position itself is a problem. The question of whether a government raises new revenues by, for example, increasing the cost of goods and services that people rely on versus, for example, kind of closing loopholes that benefit wealthy corporations and individuals or tackling corruption. These questions have serious repercussions, not only socially and on human rights, but also from an economic perspective on poverty and inequality. And so it is absolutely within the IMF's mandate and interest to systematically conduct impact assessments of policies to achieve targets to make sure that the burden of recovery is falling on people who can afford it and not making life harder for people who are already struggling.
As you mentioned, there are other countries in similarly difficult positions which also have IMF agreements. Sri Lanka is one of them, although the president now says that they have scored a victory by coming to a deal over debt. So is it possible to work within the IMF rules and make it work?
You're absolutely right. There are problems across the world. We see protests in countries with IMF programs. We saw it in Angola. We saw it in Pakistan. We saw it in Sri Lanka. In our view, that this is a systemic problem that needs to be addressed through reforms at the IMF, where poverty and inequality and the impact of programs on poverty and inequality is taken much more seriously, where they're conducting and publishing systematically impact assessments on how program conditionalities affect poverty and inequality and shaping conditionalities based on that, that there also needs to be changes to tax and debt rules to make sure that governments have the space to meet their human rights obligations. I think the problem is bigger than the Kenyan government. That said, absolutely, governments should be doing whatever is in their power to make sure that the tax proposals and the expenditure cuts that they are enacting are not violating people's rights.
But the IMF is a body that has people who contribute to it across the globe, nations, rich nations, inevitably, who put money into it and expect a kind of return and an improvement in the economic health of the countries that are being helped. So it's in their interest to try and make sure this works, but it has to work in quite a rigorous way, doesn't it? You can't just say, well, let them carry on as before. So there's pressure coming from that side too.
The suggestion is not to have governments carry on as before. The suggestion is actually to address the systemic problems that actually force governments to come back over and over and over again to the IMF for more and more lending. If the IMF's approach was working, we would not be in the situation we are in today, where many governments are on their 7th, 8th, 15th, 22nd loan. And part of the problem is that when you cut public services, when you raise taxes in ways that make people be able to spend less, you're actually undermining the health of the economy. And the way to a sustainable economy is actually by fulfilling people's human rights, by ensuring people have access to health, to education, to universal social security systems, and reducing the vast economic inequality, both within and between countries. And until we address these root causes, we will be in the same cycle of debt and IMF programs that many, many governments are trapped in.
And that was Sarah Sardoun of Human Rights Watch International.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Now let's catch up of some of what's been going on in the share markets today. Joining me is Susan Schmidt, Head of Public Equity at the State of Wisconsin Investment Board. Susan, thanks for being with us once again. First of all, it was quite interesting. Some big names have been moving a lot on the markets. Nvidia, you know, the largest, most valuable company in the world a couple of weeks ago, now rather less, and it's been falling again, hasn't it?
It has, but we've seen volatility in that name over the last several days. So month over month, we're still up 11% in the last 30 days for NVIDIA. However, we have seen volatility up 6%, down, then back up, and today almost flat, down during the day, rallying just at the end. So again, lots of volatility and a lot of attention has been focused on that stack, on that stock thus far this year. So it's natural that people are really noticing these moves.
One definitely to watch. Well, another one that was very interesting was FedEx. I mean, not always the most favored, but it leapt, and basically it's looking at a pretty good profit forecast.
Absolutely. FedEx had one of their single largest day gains in the stock market today, with the stock surging up 15% at one point. And that's because FedEx came out and talked about a very good outlook for the rest of the year, how profitable they've been, that they're going to continue to repurchase shares, which is a signal that management thinks that they're being undervalued by the market. And then importantly, addressing a long-awaited topic by investors that they might spin out their less-than-truckload division, focusing the business more on that FedEx-type typical retail delivery that one thinks of, and then separating out the commercial freight.
And another name in this, Rivian. It's not one we've heard a lot about. It's an electric car maker, but it's done a good deal with Volkswagen, at least as far as it's concerned, and its shares have reflected that.
That's right. Rivian, U.S.-based electric vehicle maker that's needed a cash infusion, so not operating profitably yet, but an answer to Volkswagen's problem. Volkswagen wants to be involved in that electric vehicle space. They've been suggesting that they can do more there, but they've had problems executing that. And so today they've announced up to $5 billion of investment in Rivian, getting a partnership together so that they can share technology and software and help smooth the way for both companies to increased penetration of that EV market.
And very briefly, Susan, we got a lot of data coming out this week. Could affect the Fed, or at least what people expect from the Fed.
Always. And remember that this data is coming out just at the end of June, which is the end of the second quarter and the last real week that investors have to fine tune their portfolios before they print numbers. And remember that July and August, slow months for the investment community. So yes, stay tuned for the Fed core price index coming out. The Fed will be focused on that as it relates to interest rates.
We'll have a good look, Susan. Thank you. Susan Schmidt there. Now, the boss of one of the world's largest free trade areas, the Dubai Multi-Commodities Center, has defended its policy to continue trading with all countries, even ones locked in conflict. The DMCC is known for its tax-free business operations. It's been criticized for letting goods and services pass through from countries like Russia, often going against Western sanctions. Well, it's now reporting a shift in trade from globalization to regionalization. Its chairman, Dr. Hamad Bouamin, told World Business Report's Will Bain how things are changing.
Dubai, as a center, is huge when it gets to businesses and in trades. We have hundreds of thousands of businesses. With the MCC, we have 24,000 businesses out of these 100,000 plus. And we represent 11% of the free investments, free direct investments that's come to Dubai.
It must have been a trying few years. Where are you right now as an industry?
Trade is changing, and this is something everybody knows. Since COVID hit, we realized that you cannot trade the way we've been trading historically. Of course, COVID was the main reason why supply chain got disrupted 5 years ago. However, nowadays it's more about the geopolitics and the extreme weathers. And we expect this, based on the reports we just published, to continue going forwards. We are moving away from globalization as we know it into regionalization.
And you're seeing that. You're seeing companies make decisions like that already.
We see that as a fact. U.S.-China tension is in the top of the agenda. Companies are considering alternative of production beyond China. We see Vietnam, we see Mexico is benefiting from that. We see India as well is getting a good chunk of the growth of productions and businesses. When it gets to Dubai, the region and the Gulf decide to take kind of a neutral stance within this tension. And we believe this benefits us as a hub in the Middle East. We try to keep the relationship with East and West to be at a neutral level. And this starts to attract businesses that, for example, they are based in China to try to position themselves in a place that it's not Chinese.
You put it as neutrality. Dr. Burmeet, I'm interested in that term because others, you know, the United States, for example, have seen it actually, that hands-off, as you would like to put it, approach, as actually being complicit in aiding, for example, Russian companies to circumvent energy sanctions because of the war in Ukraine.
It's an unfortunate stance, of course, if you look at only one side of the story right now. The conflicts that we have in Europe or in Middle East, these, of course, contribute to the whole discussions.
That's interesting. So what you seem to be saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, is that it's a better bet. There's a better financial bet to say, you know what, we still want to keep working with Russia, China, Iran, whoever it may be.
We believe that, again, we are taking a stance where it's beyond the politics. It's about the commercial. And the commercial for businesses is really...
But I don't want to kind of keep labouring this point, but to, say, the European Union, as well as the United States, or Canada, or Australia, it's not being neutral and just taking business. It's breaching policies that their governments are putting in place.
You are not wrong with that stance if you look at it only from one perspective in the world. Again, the conflict in Europe is only part of the story. The bigger story that U.S. is taking stand against China is really about the dominance in semiconductor, for example.
Mm.
And with that, again, the world where certain countries is taking a neutral stand, if I put it this way, including Saudi Arabia, is really from one side looking at dealing with different countries in the world, being east or west. From the other side is also looking at the interests of their own nations.
Dr. Hamad Bouamin there of the Dubai Multi-Commodity Center speaking to Will Bain. Now, just before we go, I'll bring you up to speed with the latest that we are hearing from Bolivia, where, as we've been reporting, there's been what appears to have been an attempted coup. In the last few moments, Reuters news agency has been reporting Bolivian armored vehicles and soldiers withdrawing from the square outside the presidential palace. The president himself, Luco Arce, has sworn in new generals for the army, the air force and the navy, and he's called on all Bolivians to take to the streets. That's World Business Report.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI for people.